The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. Yes, it does, right in your very, very soul. Good morning, everybody. This
good morning.
Is Terry Raposa and
Gwen Carpenter. Good morning.
And we are Jefferson State of Mind, broadcasting live from KCNR Studios in downtown Reading, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM. We're also streaming live on KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com. And we archive.
Forever.
And ever.
Ever. Amen.
So, you know, and the nice thing about the archive is you can share those. Feel free to send those links out. The last couple of shows we've had have been pretty good. Janet Chandler is not here today. She's advising the president on how to run the country.
Hope he takes her seriously.
Yeah. So. No, no, really. She's with Ted Cruz explaining the Constitution. Anyway, yeah, if you have a comment or a question, the phone number is 530-605-4567, 605-4567. And I want to start off the program today mentioning a fellow named Dick Wilkinson. Dick had his 94th birthday couple of days ago, and what a wonderful man he is. He and his wife, Fran, an amazing couple. Again, Dick is 94 years young, and he is a man who probably is the most generous I've ever met.
Right, and people may not know him by name, but they certainly know his address. He lives on Barrel Court, at the end of Barrel Court, with all the lights on the big red barn.
And he goes up in the attic and gets that stuff still.
And I caught him on the roof when he and his son were putting all the stuff out. He was on the roof of his house. He called me to come over there for something, and I got there, and I see Dick up on the roof. I was like, what the heck are you doing up there? I'm just putting some stuff out. I said, Dick, get down. He goes, I'll be down. Slowly.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. I'll never forget one time. I mean, he was in his late 80s, and he was still flying.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, he was. Yeah.
And great pilot. And I remember him telling me, you know, Terry, I've been a little bit ill, and I had to go get some antibiotics. And I read on the bottle that it said, you know, don't operate a motor vehicle while taking this medicine. But it didn't say anything about flying.
Yeah.
An incredible man. Anyway, kudos to him. Dick, thanks for all you do. And
thanks to Fran for allowing him to do it.
Thanks to Fran.
She's a sweetheart. Betcha. Sweetheart.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to be hoping to hear from Mark Baird here pretty shortly.
Okay.
We've got some nasty, nasty weather going around everywhere. I can imagine what's going up there on his ranch, what's going on up there.
He probably has a few snowflakes, probably.
What's that?
He probably has a few snowflakes, maybe.
You think?
Maybe.
Yeah. Even if he's got the rain, it's going to be really something else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be absolutely nuts.
Settling the dust.
You think?
That's for sure.
I mean, so, Mark, what are you doing? He goes, well, you know, I'm clearing a ditch, you know. What, a 100-yard ditch? Give it Cindy out there digging the hole? There's Stow.
So we must have a caller on the line.
We have a caller on the line, but who is it?
It is Mark.
Oh.
All right.
We have Mark.
Good
hey,
morning,
buddy.
Mark.
Hey.
How's it going?
How you doing?
Just watching the rain come down. How are you guys doing?
Good, good.
Pretty much the same thing. We're
sprinkling lightly here.
Yep, just enjoying this nice warm room we're in right now. Very thankful for that. So anyway,
yeah.
There's a couple of different things that are going on right now, and is there any more movement on your Second Amendment court case?
Yeah, you know, it's a funny thing. There's no mechanism to make a federal judge do their job. I'm convinced based on what happened in court that we're going to win, but I have no idea when the decision will publish. I expected it to publish months ago. It still hasn't. I would find it extremely odd if it went past the end of the year. I mean, the last time, I think that they do try to clear their calendars for the next year. Maybe it'll come out on, December 30th. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And the other open question is, I do expect to win, but what will we win? We'll win the right to open carry, which we had before. I mean, until the state took it away from us with no logic whatsoever, except they didn't want black people to carry guns. So that was the reason they took it away from us, and we're going to get that back, but will the legislature swing into full alert and say, oh yeah, you can carry all right, but not on this planet. You know, you can only carry if you're on the moon. I mean, you know, the California legislature, look, we live in a state that's run by liars and criminals. We do. It's, you know, look at every metric that you can measure. I mean, there are states where gasoline is under $2 a gallon. Our gasoline is predicted to hit $10 a gallon because the moron that runs this state has chased off all the refineries and producers, so we may well be paying $10 a gallon. And he'll say, well, you know, we are saving the world. Well, I'm sure glad to hear that. I mean, I know an atmospheric river is probably global warming, but it could be global cooling, but it's most certainly climate change, and so therefore you need to pay, and you need to pay and pay and pay and pay and pay. And where does that money go, by the way? Where did the $100 million in fire aid go? It didn't go to the fire victims. It went to political organizations that donate to the Democrat Party. Where did all the COVID money go? Did it go to people who donate to the Democrat Party? Did it go to CalPERS, CalSTRS, SEIU, and all the other commie state unions that run this state? Because they do own you. They own the state. Sam Paredes used to tell me all the time, he'd go to these meetings in Sacramento, these hearings in the Assembly and the Senate, and there would be union leaders standing in the back of the room. And the legislators would look at the back of the room for either a nod or a head shake in the negative, either an affirmative or a negative head shake, as to whether they would proceed on something. They didn't even use their own judgment. They waited for the unions to tell them how to act and how to behave. Because, you know, no dog is going to bite the hand that feeds them. And right now, the people of this state, we're just dogs chained to our master's table waiting for them to flick a scrap off on the floor. I mean, we're literally, in my county, we're in a legislatively mandated permanent drought condition until at least 2031. Well, when I came back from the auto parts store yesterday, Kidder Creek was outside of its banks. It's flooding.
Is there any way that could be, I mean, is there anything that you can do in Siskiyou County to reverse that?
Yeah, we can tell them no. And we can tell them, if you want the water, bring your gun. Because legislatively, they have passed a law in the state legislature, which the governor must have signed, because that's how things become law, that declares a permanent drought in the Scott and Shasta watershed alone until at least 2031, mandating the forfeiture of at least 30% of your irrigation water, which, by the way, is real property that you own. If you have a water right, that means you have the right to use the water. Well, the legislature is saying, well, you only have the right to use 70% of the water because we're taking 30% of it to save the fish that we killed when we pulled out the dams, and now we got to save the fish, and we're going to use your water to do it because we already took away the water that kept the fish alive before.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, this is such a lunatic asylum that it absolutely amazes me that any sane individual could vote for the Democrat Party in this state. It absolutely amazes me. I am mystified by people who can vote for those.
Right, you know, and exactly. The crazy thing is, and you made such a great point, is that our legislative body turns either mandate or policy into law, and our school system is absolutely atrocious. I mean, we're going to do a program on laws that have been passed, and even the governors coming in, whoever comes in as governor, if we do get a Republican governor, still can't overturn those laws because of the fact that they are law, and that's going to be up to a referendum to do that. And, you know, there is no executive power in the state where you can take a law and say, eh, we're not we're overturning that law, especially when you have a legislative body, as you say, that is dominantly Democrat in both the Senate and the Assembly. So, I mean, the school system is the worst. Our kids are our most precious gift we have from God, and that's the situation that we have in this state. I mean, it's just, I don't know where people are coming from, Mark. I have no idea what it is that they see in voting for anybody who is either a liberal Democrat or, let's just call them what they are, communists.
Socialists.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is what they are. And we do have executive power in the state that is extra constitutional. The governor proves that on a daily basis. I mean, he tells the legislature, well, I want mandates on fuel and I want this and I want that, and they do it. Now that's quasi-legal. Mm-hmm. I mean, the chief executive is allowed to express his interest to the legislature, and they are allowed to fulfill that interest. There's nothing wrong with that fundamentally. But we have a governor that is in charge of, I don't know, 575 state agencies, and literally they get mandates to create law, and they get mandates to create administrative laws. Having a talk with a friend the other day about this administrative law catastrophe that we face in California and that other states face too, but ours is probably worse than most of them, where the executive empowers this agency and gives them the power of law, and they become the judge, jury, and executioner. Mm-hmm. In other words, the State Water Board has all power over water in the state of California. Well, why do you have a Department of Water Rights if you have a board that can overrule them anytime they want? Mm-hmm. What's the point of that? And here's what they have. They have the ability to create a regulation which causes you to pay a fee. If you fail to abide by the regulation they created, then they can fine you, and the people who create the regulation declare you guilty and then collect the money. So there is no due process there, not by any stretch of the imagination, and we have 575 state boards and state agencies that have never faced an audit. I mean, who does a forensic audit on these outfits? It certainly isn't the executive branch, because he's the one that gave them their power. It certainly isn't the legislative, because there aren't enough of them to do it, for one. I mean, it's even constitutionally, the legislative branch has the power to check the judicial branch by audits and with the power of the purse. But that was back when we had, a couple of hundred judges, and you have 120 state legislators and you have a few hundred judges, yeah, no problem. But what happens when you have like 2,000 or 3,000 judges?
Right.
Are the 120 legislators genuinely keeping track on the expenditures and the will of the people based on the judicial power that's being exerted by these 2,000 judges? And then you have federal judges, which are beholden to the state. That's obvious. We've run into so many court cases where federal judges pretty much ask the Democratic Party with illicit conversations on cases where the judge is in charge, what do you want me to rule on this? I mean, we all hate the Second Amendment, so let's rule against it. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled against the Second Amendment 100% of the time in the last 100 years. 100% of the time, with a single exception of one case, and that was the one gun a month case, because they knew they didn't have a leg to stand on, and they also knew the legislature was about to pass a law saying, oh, you can buy 3 guns a month.
Wow.
That was the only case the Ninth Circuit failed to take en banc in the last 100 years.
Sounds like justice delayed is justice denied here, even through the Ninth Circuit of the 3 conservative judges that are adjudicating your case.
Well, it's going to go on bonk, probably. I mean, once those three judges will find in favor of the Second Amendment, but then the court in its entirety is weighted with Democrats, and so the en banc panel will most certainly undo what they did. And that's the problem in California, that you have a party machine, just like in Russia. I mean, you have a party machine that runs the state. No one bucks that, not even Republicans, which are a bunch of feckless idiots here in California. Even our federal representatives don't have a ton of backbone here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have this going on, and people just pay and pay and pay until they finally get tired of paying, and then they leave. You know, 10,000 businesses have left, over a million people have left. You pay a grand to get a U-Haul truck to cross the state line going to Nevada, but you can get a truck for free to go back to California, you know, because nobody wants them. I mean, the handwriting's on the wall.
Yeah.
Are you know, this state is circling the drain, and it is inevitable, and it is a doom loop that created by the state legislature and the governor, and people seem unwilling or unable to do anything about that. And I'm a little mystified by that, but all you can do is keep up the fight and try. That's the point of the Second Amendment case. We need to demonstrate to the government that we have rights. I mean, these people never sleep. They are constantly in your business or in your family's business or inside your four walls or telling you what you can eat, what you can't eat, what you can do, where you can go, how you can go there, how much it's going to cost you to go there. They are in every single facet of your life that you allow them to control, and they never sleep. It's always something, and they'll think of something tomorrow, and some of these pedophiles from San Francisco are now going to try to run for U.S. Senate and for for the House of Representatives, because with the gerrymandering, they can.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Wow.
I mean, what's his name?
Mark
Wiener? Yeah, go ahead.
Anyway, Mark Moser is trying to stop that. He was going to court originally on December 2nd. He was trying to get a preliminary injunction so that Prop 50 couldn't go until they did a little more work on that. And what's happened now is that Mark was postponed till the 15th. And I'm not, and from what I understand, I don't think he's going to get any kind, as you can certainly testify to, I don't think anybody's going to pay any attention to that case, until the court decides to. And I don't see the Ninth Circuit bending over backwards and saying, well, no, we don't want a completely democratically controlled, Congress, because that's what'll happen. You're going to have between California and New York, you're going to have 75 representatives in the House of Representatives, all Democrats. And that's, I mean, let's face it, that's where the money is, California and New York.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, but in addition to that, I mean, you have a court that, you know, in other words, the people of California voted for that sham Citizens Redistricting Committee, and then the Democratic Party went into overdrive. And they did find a lawful way to control a bipartisan Citizens Redistricting Committee. I mean, they went to a great deal of trouble to have people show up there and say, well, I remember there's one thing up here where the tribe up here claimed that they needed to have their roots connected to the people on the coast, and the Citizens Redistricting Committee was going to lump Siskiyou County in with the coast because the tribe needed their roots reconnected to people on the coast or something. You know, well, we managed to stop that, but that isn't the point. The point is the people of California voted for the Citizens Redistricting Committee by initiative, okay? And then the governor comes up with this initiative, Prop 50, and the people of California voted against their own will to dump the Citizens Redistricting Committee, and the entire purpose of that was because the people of California said unequivocally that they did not want the legislature to redistrict for purely political purposes. They did not want that. But people in California, voters, or vote cheats or whatever election theft they have going now, voted against their own will to dump the Citizens Redistricting Commission so that the legislature could redistrict the state of California for purely political purposes, which is tyranny of the majority, by the way, against the will of the people, which didn't want that. I'm confused when I even try to describe that.
Well, you know, it's mob rule. I mean, because you could have 40 counties out of the 58 that would vote no, an emphatic no, on that.
And you still lose.
You still lose by a long shot. It's like we had 11 counties that are contiguous, including both our counties, yours and Wynn's and I, and we voted almost 70% no, and California still creamed us 63.6% on a yes.
Right.
So
exactly.
Until we split this state, and until we have our liberty back, and until we have a voice, nothing's going to change. It'll only get worse. And
well,
go ahead.
We have a big problem with that, and it's so far has been an insurmountable problem. People have to care enough about their own liberty to help us do the above.
Yep.
To split the state.
Yep.
And if people don't care whether they're slaves or free, then we cannot accomplish the goal we've set out to accomplish. And at the moment, I have to say, they don't care.
Well,
they need to stop asking, when are you going to get this done for us?
Well,
it's like, really, why don't you jump
the real
and help
deal
out?
Is they don't, they, when they look at Article 4, Section 3, they look at it and they say, we're never going to get the legislative body of California to let us go. That has been the biggest, most single argument from people who are that I've talked to in Republican Central Committees and the Republican Party here in California. They're never going to let us go. And if you stop and think about that, because of the money control and everything else, and look at L.A. I mean, what do they do without our water? They'd still be able to have our water because there's some federal things tied in there. But there, you know, if they don't. That's the biggest argument we get. I mean, that's the biggest argument I get. Maybe you guys get another one, but that's when I get it. I don't think people don't want it. I think they just are defeated. They feel defeated. And it's just one thing after another. And after a while, there's people who will keep standing. But Mark, you're probably the first one to say that, you know, you're going to get 20 people out of 100 that'll do the job. The other 80, you know, don't really do that. So, it's the avenue that we take, and I think that with James Gallagher saying, hey, we need to split the state, and getting other representatives on the Republican side in the assembly saying, yeah, you know, we got to split the state. There's no other thing we can do. I think that's at least a start. And then, of course, how it's going to be done is a different thing, but the idea of at least that happening, and maybe I'm not really looking at this through rose-colored glasses. That remark in itself, that position in itself, that resolution in itself is a start in that vein. And I think we are getting more interest in that. It's just a matter of, how do we let them, I kind of liked what they did in 1941, you know? Let's just set up a pickup line.
Well, I mean, I think you're certainly onto something, and it's something we've talked about before. You know, there are principles under which this could be accomplished that are not outside the box, but they're certainly outside the lines in the box. And that is that we need the interposition of lesser magistrates. In other words, we need county boards of supervisors to stand in support of James Gallagher's resolution, and one has, your county already has. My county has said they're going to, but they haven't yet. I'm still hopeful that after the board chair changes this year that we can have a successful outcome to that. We're going to need other counties to stand and say that what is happening now is unsustainable. And really, the problem we face, at least in rural California, is the model that the liars and thieves in Sacramento and some other jurisdictions have set up for us is unsustainable. It's unsustainable, certainly for us. I mean, it may not be for them as long as they can suck us dry. And it's funny, Canada operates under much the same principle. The government in Canada was formed so that the people in Quebec could suck the resources of the western provinces dry in order to sustain the French model of government in Montreal and Quebec. That literally is a principle that is, it has been followed for years and years and years. The country of Canada exists so that the people of Quebec can prosper from the resources that they gain from the rest of the country.
Now, are you watching what's going on up there right now? Alberta wants to split from Quebec and become its own country.
Well, gee, because even a dog knows the difference between being tripped over or being kicked.
Well, the thing is, Alberta is the most resource generous province in the union up there. Sounds familiar. So they've got all the oil and everything. Yeah.
And they finally realize that they're not part of the country, they're being used.
And they're the most conservative.
And they're being used for their detriment. Exactly. Yeah. So if we have lesser magistrates, county supervisors, county sheriffs, county whatever, that are willing to stand against this, and we the people support them, because here's the other side of this coin. You can't expect a county sheriff to carry the water for everybody. You can't expect county supervisors to carry the water for everybody. You have to help them. You have to support them. You have to stand with them. You got to contribute money. You got to stand. You got to vocally stand. You got to show up. You got to be.
We've got to take our break, but I want you to think of the answer to this question when we come back. So I want to talk about the sheriffs a little bit and the fact that what exactly do you want the sheriffs to do? What do we want them to do? Standing with them means what? Does that mean standing with them, you know, with self-help? So let's talk about that after the break, my friend. So hang on, Mark. We're with Mark Baird. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Strong and proud American. Red hats hang beside.
North Valley Distributing, a major supplier of electronic products for the industrial and construction markets, is proud to sponsor Operation Holiday Salute on KCNR to thank our veterans and those currently serving in the armed forces for your dedication and service to our country. North Valley Distributing at 3081 Crossroads Drive offers a full range of electrical and electronic products and services. Check out our website at northvalleydistributing.com.
Celebrate the holiday season at Redding Garden of Lights, open November 21st through January 4th at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay in Redding, California. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with over 2 million lights, plus holiday-themed music, food and drinks, glowing swings, and more. New for 2025, upgrade your experience with a train ride on the new Turtle Express, adorned with festive lights and wintry displays. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Dignity Health Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets online at turtlebay.org.
It's holiday chaos at its finest. It's Have Yourself a Crazy Little Christmas by Colin Andrew Lonis and directed by Maureen Sanders and Rhonda Alvey. The tree isn't the only thing getting lit, and the family chaos makes fruitcake look stable. It's a festive fiasco of miscommunication, mischief, and merry mayhem. Perfect for anyone who thinks their own Christmas is a disaster. Running December 5th through 21st at the Riverfront Playhouse in downtown Reading. Sponsored by this station and these other pro-arts businesses.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Hi, my name is Lori from Backrubs. We've been working with the Rancheria since 2008. It's an honor to be partnering with Rancheria. They are one of our favorite groups to work with.
I'm Yasmin Pena with Shasta Heat and Air Conditioning. We've been working with the Redding Rancheria since 2022, and we are proud to be their go-to whenever they need work done.
Redding Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
Oh,
the season. Tis the season, the birth of Christ.
He's the reason for the season.
Absolutely. Thank you. Was that Sally Lou who did that, or was that you, Alex?
That was her. That was Sally Lou. Today. Yep.
Sally used to wake up the kids on Christmas morning with the Hallelujah Chorus about 6 a.m. She was always the biggest kid, and all of a sudden we'd see them slowly coming out of their rooms, like, you know, like just waking up, and Sally played the Hallelujah Chorus, and it was blasting.
Sounds delightful.
It was funny. It was great. They knew to get up.
Yep.
Hallelujah. The biggest kid of all of them was up first. You know? Okay, so we were talking about basically state split, which is what we need to have. We need even have a Republican assembly for the most part saying we've got to do this. Mark, you were talking about how we need to, the sheriffs can't do it alone. I don't even know if our sheriff would want to do it. Tell me a sheriff that wants to do it, and what do we want to, what is it exactly that we want to see the sheriff do?
Well, I'm with you on that because, but, you know, you hear talk about this constitutional sheriff stuff. And number one, there is no such thing as a constitutional sheriff, at least not in California, because the sheriff isn't constitutional. He works for the, attorney general. But nevertheless, if you have a lesser magistrate, such as a sheriff, and he is willing to stand for the Constitution, you can't say to the guy, okay, well, let me know when you get that done. You know, you have to support him. And, I mean, the way we do that in Siskiyou County is we have service organizations that work with the sheriff's department during times of natural disaster, wildfires, earthquakes, hurricanes, things like flooding, things like that. And we volunteer to help the people of this county under the auspices of the sheriff's department and utilizing partially that jurisdiction. Now, that could be stretched, for example, in a Revolutionary War type scenario where lesser magistrates declare that the government, the national government of Britain, is acting unlawfully toward the citizens of this colony or of this township or whatever. And then the local magistrates declare that they need a force of people to, in order to buck that authority. And that's where a county sheriff might step in, and that's where people might volunteer because the black robes are gone. You can't do it through your church anymore because there is no such thing. So there have to be other lesser magistrates that help, do things in an orderly and lawful fashion so that they're done right and people don't have any heartburn stepping up to the plate to volunteer. And that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and I agree with all that. The thing is that find me a sheriff because 29 of them, we know minimum, that's the minimum, have been selected, not elected. They have been,
like I said, there is no such thing
there is no such thing.
Sheriff in California.
Right, I agree.
So,
and, you know, so.
But there could be, and that's up to us, too. I mean, we have to create an environment where those things are acceptable.
I think that a lot of people don't understand the power of the sheriff because the sheriff, to them, if he's a good cop, he's a good cop. They think he's a cop. I mean, again, there's different things that we understand, and because of you, frankly, and the teachings that you've taught a lot of people and the teachings of Chris Ann Hall, and a lot of people have talked about the sheriff situation, the doctrine of the lesser magistrate. We talked about it at a Board of Supervisor meeting, which kind of led to the resolution agreeing with James Gallagher's state split, agreeing with his resolution, is what our particular county Board of Supervisors did. We may have a better shot with the Board of Supervisors, but even then, the sheriff may not do what you know, he's going to do whatever feathers his nest. The other thing is
that's the problem.
That's the problem.
And when you look at the Second Amendment, just the Second Amendment specifically, the sheriffs in counties with less than 200,000 people, were mandated by law to issue open carry permits to people who wanted them. But no sheriff ever did that. And why didn't they do it? Well, they have, and by the way, in the pursuit of my court case, I polled all 58 sheriff's departments. And none of them, the ones that were over 200,000, they had an easy excuse. Oh, well, I can't do that because our county has more than 200,000. But I got to say, the majority of them had never even heard of an open carry permit, didn't even know it was possible, and told me, oh, well, that's not a law. And then I quote the Penal code, and they go, oh crap, well, I'm not going to give those out anyway. And they all had different excuses. I'm not going to give those out anyway. It's number one, it's not necessary. Number two, I don't want people to have open carry. Okay. Even though the permit was available, under the law of California, I don't want people to open carry. Or my cops would be afraid
all the above.
Yeah, all
the above. Is Dick still on the line?
So, okay, I don't understand how they can, do what they do when they take an oath to the Constitution. They take an oath to the Constitution. Why are they in denial of that?
How does any liar do what he does?
Good point.
I mean, it's not right, but they just do it, and they have, quite frankly, they have all the guns, so they can do it.
Exactly. Dick, are you still there on the line? And we can, Mark won't be able to hear, is that right? Okay, Mark, stay with us, brother. You're not going anywhere. Okay. Jesse won't be able to hear when we bring Dick on. Okay. Dick?
Yes.
Are you on there?
Yes.
Okay. We were kind of hoping you'd call in earlier. We're in the middle of are you listening?
Yeah, I heard you.
Okay.
Thank you for the kind words you said.
You betcha. You betcha, brother. It's great. Anyway, what's on your mind real quick?
Some people have been helping me. Rasping shoulder.
You're talking about the lights on Barrel Court, and you're in the Salvation Army situation that you have there. That's great. Yeah, go ahead.
No, Robert Exeter has been helping me. He comes out at 5 o'clock and states that we finish. He's been helping me about 11, 12 years. And then Morton Guy Seca, he's been helping me about 5 or 6 years. Comes out every night at 5 and states that we're good. And then we have a young lady named Katie Carpenter, who's Wynn Carpenter's daughter. She's been out the last 4 nights or so, and with her friend Ben, and I want to thank them very much. They've been a great help to me to have these volunteers help me. And tonight, we got high winds. I might have to shut down. The rain doesn't stop us, but I have a canopy I put up. But the wind gusts up to 40 miles an hour this evening, and I might have to just shut the whole thing down. We can't deal with candy canes and cattle out there with the high wind, so I'm just waiting to see how the weather's going to be. And Christmas Eve is another threat, so the rain's going to really pay havoc with us, so I might have to shut down on these nights. But anyway, thanks for the kind words at the beginning of your show, Terry.
Well, thank you, Dick and Fran. You guys are amazing. Again, he is the most generous man in this town. In Salvation Army, he's the largest single collector of money for the Salvation Army of anybody, probably in the state. I don't know if that's true or not, but we know at least in the county, that's for darn sure.
You know, if somebody would like to help, they could send a check to me. Make it out to Salvation Army, don't I? Make it out to me. Salvation Army in the lower left memo put Red Barn Kettle. And mail it to my address, 3187 Barrel Court.
3187 Barrel Court. Okay.
Reading 96001, or drop it by our home. Just come by.
Okay.
It's a big red barn close to the intersection of East Bonneview and South Bonneview. So, anyway, we need your help. Anybody could help. We appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Bless you, and talk to you soon.
Thank you, Dick.
Thank you. Bye.
You bet. Okay, so can we switch back to Mark? Mark, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, good. Yeah, it's, you know, we talk about this, and I think we've talked about it till we're blue in the face about the constitutional sheriff. I mean, the chance we have is the supervisors. You know, at this particular point in time, you know, we have to come up with something, and I think the start of it with what James Gallagher did is something, but we have to come up with something that's, of course, going to be more feasible in the state splitter state splits. Now, I did ask James about the 4-state split, and I did send him that example. He liked the concept. He just said that would be arduous to do. Well, I think anything worth anything is going to be hard.
Doesn't mean it's not doable, and doesn't mean it isn't worth it.
Well, yeah, that's true. And here's where, you know, we're trying to go with that. I mean, in the history of state split, the Article 4, Section 3 state split, it's been done four times, arguably, maybe a little more than that. Depends on how you look at how states were formed after the Revolutionary War and for what purpose and what rules did they follow and so on and so forth. And after the Revolution, there was a real rush to admit states to the Union because they needed to pay off the war debt. So the money had a lot to do with it. When Alabama became a state, the federal government tried to intervene, and they tried to say, well, you can be a state, but you can't have this, and you can't have that, and you can't have this, and you can't have that. And Alabama went to the Supreme Court, and that's where we got the Equal Footing Doctrine, which is to say states admitted to the Union enjoy the same rights and privileges as the original 13, and the federal government can't say those things. Now, even in the course of state split, there are times when the legislature allowed the state split. There were times when there was no state legislature, so a territorial legislature had to appeal to Congress, and no one asked them to do it except by popular vote. So the vote of the people was to, hey, we have enough people now, we're the territory of North Dakota or whatever, and we have enough people now, we want to become a state, we appeal to our territorial legislature, and they in turn appeal to Congress, and then Congress allows it. But those were states formed from territories and not from the territory of other states. And then you have some states that were formed partially by the legislature appealing to Congress and partially by the people. Virginia v. West Virginia in 1871, because two counties got left behind with Virginia when West Virginia became a state. Those two counties wanted to go with West Virginia, but at the point of a bayonet and General Lee's army, they were prohibited from doing that. After the war, they had a popular vote in those two counties. They appealed directly to Congress. The state legislature said, no, we're a state now, we're Virginia again, and you can't do that without following the Article 4 process. You can't do that unless we approve, and we don't approve. And they took that case to court, and they won. They won in the Supreme Court, Virginia v. West Virginia, and they ended up being allowed to join West Virginia, even though the state legislature did not agree. And I'm sure part of their appeal was tyranny of the majority, because they knew darn well the state legislature wasn't going to agree. In the case of Oklahoma, the Oklahoma Territory had a legislature and the Congress for statehood, but the Indian Territory, to my knowledge, did not have a state legislature, and they simply had a vote of the people. They also appealed to the Congress, and they were joined in with the territory of Oklahoma to become the state of Oklahoma, at which point the federal government said, well, you can be a state, but you got to move your capital. And the Supreme Court said, no, equal footing doctrine. They don't have to do any of that stuff. So, you know, the rules have been followed and not followed kind of off and on throughout the history of Article 4. Maine from Massachusetts, they did not want to be part of the Massachusetts colony, so they formed their own colony just all by themselves. Well, nobody fought it, kind of. I mean, it was an extra legal thing at the time because the colonies were formed by charter of the king, not parliament. And so when Maine separated from Massachusetts, they had no permission to do that. And then when they appealed for statehood later, they were technically part of Massachusetts, but Congress allowed it because they wanted a free state in the Clay Compromise. So these things are, Article 4, Section 3 in its totality is spurious at best. Okay, sometimes people follow the rules, sometimes they didn't, sometimes there were extenuating circumstances, sometimes there wasn't, but there is certainly enough history to say that by popular vote, we would have a leg to stand on, at least to get it as far as the Supreme Court, as to whether the people can appeal to the power of the Lord God Almighty and the power of the congressional legislature to say we're being tyrannized by a very few counties in California, and we're literally being enslaved by those counties so that all of our produce, all of our products, our ability to make a living for ourselves and our family is being destroyed by a very few counties who profit from that, and we need to get away from them.
And the court and system is part of that, a big part of that.
And,
the court system is a big part of that. And the point you made before about, that was a very good point, I mean, we went from like 50 judges in 1862 when we capped everything in the legislative body to over 2,500 today, you know? And you were so right about that point. I mean, so when you look at all that happening, I mean, everything almost goes back to, it's probably a good thing that we're on radio and I have to be very careful about my colorful metaphors because I don't want to get Alex in trouble, but boy, I could use a whole bunch of them right now.
Thanks for that.
You're welcome, brother. Good thing you don't do a podcast with us. Anyway, so the thing is that I'm just really tired of this because we keep going in the same, I don't want to say the word, but circle.
We keep going in the same freaking circle.
Okay, let's go to court.
We can break the circle because when you look at it, the last time we went to court, we were just people, right? And let's face it, the government of the people, by the people, and for the people
isn't that
doesn't exist.
No, it isn't.
The government for the rich, by the rich, for the important exists because you look at it. We appealed under Title 8, 2284, for a 3-judge panel. We received that panel. The judge did something that no other federal judge has ever done in the history of this country, reversed her own decision after speaking with people who were, she considered her superiors, apparently, and she decided she was going to deny us justice because she is a Democrat and she could. And that same judge has done it before and done it in different venues to different people, done it to Siskiyou County a couple of times now. But the character of the court may be changing. Now, you have important people and rich people like Doug LaMalfa and his buddies. They're mad about Prop 50, so they sued, assumably, under Title 8, 2284. Because why? How do I know that? Because they immediately got a 3-judge panel.
Immediately.
And they just
said, they did.
Immediately.
Yep.
Well, how do you get a 3-judge?
Well, we kind of did, too. She just rescinded ours.
Right. But the point is, how do you get a 3-judge panel, and it has to be through Title 8, 2284.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, now, the important thing for people to recognize about that is, if you start with a 3-judge panel, every case has a right of appeal. A right of appeal, not an ability to appeal. Well, if you start with a 3-judge panel, which is an appellate court panel, your right of appeal automatically is the United States Supreme Court, and they cannot say no. They have to take the case because every case has a right of appeal. And if your only appeal is to the Supreme Court, well, you don't have an appeal if they don't hear the case. So if that dam is breaking and 2284 will get us a 3-judge panel, then aside from the crooked liar that we ran into last time, oh, and by the way, she got a new job. She's going to teach law at Columbia University. So you can, yeah, I mean, well, that shouldn't be, that should scare everybody because the next load of lawyers is going to be educated by a crooked liar. So there you go.
Well, what happens when it goes to en banc? It goes to en banc. So, okay, you get the 3-judge
panel. No, that's not an appeal.
No.
That's the right of appeal.
Okay, so let's say could the 3-judge panel say, well, we want this to go to en banc? Is that the way it works? Do they make that decision?
No, the 3-judge panel doesn't make that decision.
Who does?
The court makes that decision. In other words, the 3-judge panel decides the case. If the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals doesn't like how it came out, then they can grab the case send it to the en banc.
Right.
But you as the plaintiff accusing the government of wrongdoing, you still have a right of appeal, and that appeal is to the United States Supreme Court.
So then you have more layers and more layers of time
Look, nobody said this was going to be cheap or easy, but at least there's a path, and that's what we're looking for, a path. And when you look at the Abbott versus Evenwell case, they made it to the Supreme Court, and they made it in record time because they went through Title 8, 2284, and they did not run into crooked judges along the way. They had judges that followed the rule.
There's no disagreement with anything you said. It's all right on. The whole point is they screwed us.
Yes.
The court screwed us.
They didn't. Judge Mueller did.
She screwed us. Okay, so the thing, so the point is that when you have a situation where that's going on, again, I mean, the level of, there's two ways to look at this, and probably a third way, because you're good at that. But there's two ways that we're kind of seeing this. One is, okay, we can go to court, or two is, we can take the path of initiative, or, you know, those are the two paths we have. Neither one of those paths are going to be cheap, and I agree with that. But it's more crap that happens while we're trying to get our justice. I mean, I'm not saying that it's time for a revolution. I'm not saying that. But as we look at this, I'd sure like to hear something that would get this done. And we have the right, as you've said so many times in California, we have the God-given right to get rid of our governing body if it doesn't meet the needs of the people. And especially if it's not constitutional, which it's not. And, you know, at this point, now I did hear this. I was talking to two people that have some influence in Virginia and Arkansas. And they had stated, one of them had stated that he does have communication with President Trump. And he's saying, and I just found this out 2 days ago, this is what they're saying, this could be QAnon again and all this other stuff. He's saying the president, within 35 days, the machines will be gone. That's what he said. Now, is that true or not? I don't know. It comes from a pretty reliable source. Can the president do that? I don't know. The president's done a lot of things I didn't think were constitutional. Those executive orders are pretty handy. So I don't know. But the point is that I think people either are going to be willing to get in there and fight no matter what it takes, or they're going to say, screw this, I'm just going to live out my life the best I can, because nothing's going to change this.
Yeah, well, to those people, I say, may your chains rest upon you lightly, and may we forget that you were ever once called our countrymen. Now, kneel down and lick the hand that feeds you. That's the only thing I have to say to those people. If you prefer to get along to go along, then you're nothing but a dog chained to the table, lick the hand that feeds you, and good luck with that. Personally, I'm not.
Yeah.
There are several pathways open to us. The Article 4, Section 3 pathway, but we have to create an agenda where it is more profitable for the liars and thieves in Sacramento to be able to maintain some semblance of power by letting us go. Or we're going to have to go to court. In other words, there are legal, ethical, moral pathways here, and we may not like them, and they may not be easy, and they may not be cheap, but they still exist. That's what they are.
I don't know if I agree with ethical. I don't know if I agree. I think that self-help could be ethical.
Well, self-help can be ethical, but I haven't gotten to that yet.
Well, you got a minute and 20 seconds.
There are legal, moral, and ethical pathways. One of them is Article 4, Section 3. One of them is initiative, and we have to create an initiative that makes it more profitable for the liars to let us go than it is to try to hang on to us. There is a pathway through court, Title 8, 2284. I certainly think we have a case to prove.
Yep.
All we need to do is get the case in front of the Supreme Court where it can be proven, and away from the Ninth Circuit Court where likely it won't be proven. So we need to do that. Cheap? No. Expensive? Yes. Time-consuming? Certainly, but that's legal, moral, ethical. The third pathway is the interposition of lesser magistrates, through which we create a groundswell where we demand that the legislature allow us to go, and we pick up our guns and we support our local magistrates, our local boards of supervisors. But I got to tell you right now, I don't think there's enough backbone at the county level in enough counties to be able to do that.
Okay.
However, that is a pathway.
They're going to cut us
off. And at that point, it will be ethical because we'll have no other choice.
All right. Mark Baird.
Thank you, Mark.
A patriot. They don't make them like that no more.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, brother. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Merry Christmas.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.